The National Broadcasting Company presents Lives of Great Men, a new series on great leaders in human progress, presented by Dr. Edward Howard Griggs, distinguished lecturer, critic, and author of The Soul of Democracy and many other books. In his talks, Dr. Griggs is building a story of civilization based on outstanding characters through the ages and how each one influences his own and future times. This evening, Dr. Griggs will discuss Tolstoy, Moral Leadership in Mysterious Russia. We present Edward Howard Griggs.
My friends, Tolstoy was a great bizarre character springing from the most puzzling background of the modern world, characteristic of his people in the first half of his life, but in the latter half, rising to a high social and spiritual gospel. When his death occurred in November 1910, under those pathetic circumstances, the old man going out alone to die apart in a kind of last futile protest against a society he could not accept, there followed the flood of articles like the buzzing of flies over a dead lion. As time passes, the lion is dust and the flies are still. Perhaps now we may see what Tolstoy was, with the value of his message for our disturbed time. Russia, with striking contradictions, has been a mystery to the rest of the world. A land of vast and benumbing gloom, she developed a fine flower of culture. Continuing into modern times, a czarist autocracy, she reacted to extreme communist revolution. Her people, however, never speak of their country as part of Europe. They say Europe and Russia, with the sense that she broods apart with a unique destiny. One cause of the paradox is the land itself, rolling steps under a gray sky, with short, quick-passing summer and long, desolate winter time. More important is the race, with its Celtic-like emotionalism, showing extremes of passion, somber and careless. Opposite this in the Slav is a dumb, oriental, resistant quality, which made it possible for Russia to push forward her czarist imperialism, and when the waves rolled up from without, draw back, waiting a decade, a century if need be, only to push forward again. Such a people can be defeated, but not conquered. Still more significant is the way Russia took on the garment of civilization, wakening late from her barbaric sleep to reach out and take over the culture elaborated in Western Europe. In such a case, the stimuli of civilization suddenly release the biological energies accumulated under a thousand years of barbarism. Whatever the more primitive people borrows is thus carried to extreme expression. And that is what happened in every phase of Russian life. It is long, however, before the civilization thus lifted over can sift down to the mass of the people. Thus, in the last phase of Tsarist Russia, while the aristocrats and intellectuals represented the extreme of Occidental culture, the millions of Russian peasants remained in the semi-barbaric sleep that had marked them for a thousand years. The chasm between high and low, cultivated and ignorant, was more terrible and unbridgeable than elsewhere in the modern world. This made possible the revolution and present Russian situation. Such a mother will bear strange children, and the school of Russian novelists at the close of the 19th century is but one of the many bizarre births from the breast of that Sphinx mother. Tolstoy, head of that school, was Russian of the Russians. Nothing could be more characteristic of his people than the first half of his life, though its conclusion is in contradiction. Born in 1828 of noble family, his boyhood was on the estates out from Moscow. His contact with the common people was only as little master in relation to the serfs. He attended the universities of Kazan and Moscow, being interested particularly in science and philosophy. Becoming an army officer, he advanced to high position, served through the Crimean War, and was in command of a portion of the Russian army at the storming of Sebastopol. Sickened by the bloodshed he had witnessed in which he had taken part, Tolstoy resigned his commission to go to St. Petersburg and join the literary circle there. Quickly he became the head of the remarkable group of novelists and poets of the time. He traveled somewhat in Western Europe, but carried the problems of his Russian world and saw chiefly what bore upon them. At 34, Tolstoy married and went to live on his estates out from Moscow. The serfs had been freed 2 years before, and he devoted himself to the problems this brought upon every Russian proprietor. In the decade following his marriage, his greatest novels, War and Peace, and Anna Karenina were written. Suddenly in middle age, his life was transformed, converted in literal sense, turned round about and made to face the other way. We find him repudiating his great novels, wishing he had not written them, refusing pay for his writings and dedicating sums received to social causes, desiring to give up all his property and withheld only by the vigorous protest of wife and children, wearing the Russian peasant dress and working part of each day with his own hands. Thus, for the remaining 30 years of his life, Tolstoy lived to teach, preach, and make prevail a spiritual and social gospel. Full as his life is of romantic incident, the true history of the man is the record of his thinking, centering on the transformation. Fortunately, all his writings reveal that deeper story. His great novels contain chapters of his life, while childhood, boyhood, and youth, and the stories of a Russian proprietor are slightly veiled autobiography. Further, My Religion and My Confession are entirely personal. The last was written to tell the story of the spiritual awakening. But as that is the center of Tolstoy's life that interprets the whole, his confession is the most illuminating spiritual autobiography. He begins by telling that when a lad of 11, he learned from a schoolmate that God did not exist. He grew up to manhood in the skepticism, both religious and moral, characterizing his class at that time. Entering the army, he experienced all the vices that accompany professional militarism. Of his period of reckless living, Tolstoy says, "I put men to death in war. I fought duels to slay others. I lost at cards, wasted my substance wrung from the sweat of my peasants, punished the latter cruelly, rioted with loose women, and deceived men." Such a man joined the literary circle in St. Petersburg. There he thought he was teaching something, but knew nothing to teach. Imagined he was living for the progress of the species, while really living for his own ease and luxury. After his marriage, his aim became the welfare of family and dependents. Suddenly, the ground seemed to go from under him. He found such questions as these running through his mind. "I now own so many thousand acres of land in the government of Samara. What then? Or suppose I could attain all my aims. What then? Would it mean anything?" The hollow echo of his question was the only answer. He fell into abject despair, caught himself taking down a rope in his study lest he hang himself, hiding away his revolver to avoid taking an easy way out. This was not the picturesque pessimism of youth, sentimentally pleased with its own melancholy. This is a middle-aged man, happily married, rich and famous, suddenly finding the cup of life bitter and unable to drink from it. He tells his suffering by narrating a folk story of a traveler lost in the steppes, who turned to see a wild beast pursuing him. He ran till he came to a well down which he sought to climb, but below saw a dragon with yawning mouth waiting to devour him. So he held to the branch of a wild plant growing from the well wall. As he clung with failing strength, two mice came, one white, one black, to gnaw at the branch. He knew it would soon break, dropping him into the dragon's mouth, but with the dumb curiosity of despair, looked about him and saw two drops of honey on a leaf of the wild plant, stretched out his tongue and licked them. Tolstoy says that was my condition. Pursued, does he mean, by the unanswered enigma of life? Clinging to the frail branch of life with the dragon of death waiting to receive him? And the two mice, black and white, does he mean night and day, gnawing in quick succession at the branch by which we cling? He adds, "I too had my two drops of honey, my family and my writings, but these now palled on his tongue." He turned to the studies of his college days, but found no answer in science and philosophy. He then examined those of his social class and found four attitudes. The first group, of some men and most women, was unaware that there was any problem. The second, recognizing the futility of life, adopted the Epicurean solution: eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. The third, of strong men, took the way of stoic suicide. The fourth group, equally aware of the vanity of existence, being weak, merely drifted. And Tolstoy adds, to this last group, I myself belonged. He is not fair to himself in the concluding statement, since it was not weak drifting that kept him from suicide, but a growing recognition that while those of his social set were so sure life was meaningless, the unnumbered millions of Russian peasants had gone on for generations in the assured conviction that life had infinite and eternal meaning. Increasingly, it seemed well before he went out to find how all those people could be so mistaken. In the faith of the common people, he found two basic elements. They believed they were here not for their own pleasure, but to do God's will, and they should live not for themselves, but for others. Whence came these? You know, the two commandments that Jesus said gathered up the law and the prophets, to love God with all your heart, and your neighbor as yourself. Through the common faith, Tolstoy thus discovered the teaching of Jesus. As he studied it, he became convinced that Jesus taught a gospel of sharing all things and of complete non-resistance to evil, and so sought to live it, remaining to the end opposed to the entire commercial, police, and military system of society. Whatever view we take of Tolstoy's interpretation of Christ's teaching, we must recognize that, like St. Francis, he was one of the few entirely literal Christians, seeking to live in conduct what they hold to be their chosen master's teaching. So he found peace? Well, he says so, loudly. But one questions if he were not striving to convince himself and us that he had found it. There is a basic conflict in him resulting from the situation of his life. With strong passions, he had reacted almost to a celibate creed. He toiled at peasant labor and came into a luxury-loaded table. With wealth he could not renounce, social rank he could not escape, his convictions were for equal brotherhood. His ideals were thus thwarted by his environment, which explains his pathetic final effort to escape. There is more unity in him, before and after the conversion, than he knew. In all his later teaching, is there anything more morally searching than the simple portrayal of Prince Andrei's relation to his little wife in War and Peace, or than the remorseless showing of deeds as destiny in Anna Karenina? Characteristic of his later work is the slavery of our times. Its initial thesis is so just that there can be no true reform of society except by making over the men and women who compose society. When he applies his thesis, who can follow him? He would sweep away the whole range of institutions which represent the slow adjustment of will to will and interest to interest through ages of human progress. If Tolstoy is wrong in seeing all the evil at the top of society and the good at the bottom, if he fails to appreciate the eternal womanly and the highest form of personal love, if he errs in his judgment of art, how needed is his message by the modern world. In urging the true simplification of life, the return from the adventitious to the real, from the things on the surface to those at the heart, he arraigned the dominant fault of our time. In insisting that man cannot live on the closed circle of knowledge, but must rest in that larger circle of faith that is the substance of things hoped for, he brings comfort to those adrift on the sea of doubt. Above all, his strength lies in teaching the brotherhood of humanity that we need the others and all the others, that he who cuts himself off from any part of our common human life does so to his own detriment. There is something still deeper, that somber moral earnestness marking him early and late, before as well as after his conversion. It is that which, under the gray sky of the steppes, and in spite of the scars from reckless years, gives him his place among those moral and spiritual leaders who contribute the dynamic element in the progress of mankind.
Tolstoy, Moral Leadership in Mysterious Russia, has been the subject of another program in the series titled Lives of Great Men, presented by Dr. Edward Howard Griggs, distinguished lecturer, critic, and author. Next week, Dr. Griggs will speak on Ibsen, psychologist and critic of modern society. Copies of tonight's discussion of Tolstoy may be obtained by addressing the National Broadcasting Company, Radio City, New York, or the station to which you are listening. This is...